You will notice that I am barefoot, and I am barefoot because I'm standing on my mat. This mat is one that would be used for sleeping, for eating, for sitting, and all kinds of other things. I want to share with you what has become my kind of life verse. It's Isaiah chapter 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a high and lofty throne, and his robe filled the temple. Seraphim were standing above him. Each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one called to the other, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. His glory fills the whole earth." The foundations of the doorway shook at the sound of their voices, and the temple was filled with smoke. Then I said, "Woe is me, for I am ruined, because I am a person of unclean lips and live among a people of unclean lips, and because my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." Then one of the seraphim flew to me, and in his hand was a glowing coal that he had taken from the altar with tongs. He touched my mouth with it and said, "Now that this has touched your lips, your wickedness is removed, and your sin is atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Who should I send? Who will go for us?" I said, "Here I am. Send me." Isaiah understood what it meant to go. And I think so often we are sometimes afraid to share the gospel. But I was able, can we go ahead, can we do the song, please? I want you to listen to this song. And I don't want to talk during it because I want you to hear the words to this song. Because it is entitled, "Here I Am." On your paper are the words, so if you can't, you can kind of follow along. I know it's real small print. "Somehow my story is a part of your plan. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story, and you're going to see how that song really fits in to my story and probably fits into your story, too. I was saved at about the age of 9, and then about the age of 12, I went to Bambi Lake with the girls' mission group. And while I was there, I felt God calling me to missions. Well, that was many, many moons ago, and at that time, we really thought missionaries could only be one thing, and that was missionaries in deepest, darkest Africa. And I thought, oh, I am not going to Africa, but I'll do missions. I don't want to go to Africa. Well, I grew up and went on to Bible college, and while I was at Carson Newman, God said, "You're going to Africa." And I said, "I don't want to go to Africa, but I'll do missions." So I married a preacher. I thought, that's pretty good. And then after 25 years, he died. I thought, okay, now what do I do? God said, "You're going to Africa." And while I was sitting in an IMB kind of emphasis, International Mission Board emphasis, Sunday morning, the pastor came up to me and said, "Sharon, you're going to Africa with us." And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm a widow now. I am supporting myself. I don't have the money to go to Africa." He said, "You're going to Africa. God's going to provide for you to go to Africa." I said, "Oh, yeah, right, sure. Uh-huh." And I sat back in my little spot and did all my things that I always do on Sunday mornings. And then he began to preach, and I began to say, okay, yeah, all right, I get it. I'm going to Africa. And that morning, I talked with the pastor, and I said, "I don't know how. I don't have $3,000 to go to Africa, but somehow God's going to provide." And he did. And so you are beginning to see some of the pictures of my trip to Africa. The ones that you see right now are actually in Casablanca. That was just kind of a day layover, and that is actually the third largest Islamic mosque in the world. It is by far the most beautiful building I have ever seen. It sits on the shores of the Atlantic Ocean, and you can't see it very well in these pictures because we're speeding by in a taxi. That is a whole other story, and you need to ask me about that story later. But there are just amazing blue tiles throughout this mosque, and it is absolutely gorgeous. But it made me cry because I'm thinking, all this money wasted on Muhammad, just wasted. Well, then And as they scroll through, I'll look back because I do want to tell you about a few people. There were five of us ladies, and this may sound a little racist, but five white women in an African nation can be a little scary. Even though the Tuareg people, which is the people group that I went to work with, are considered red, if you look at them, you're going to think they're black. There is only one black man in the group, and when you look at my pictures in the back, I will point him out to you, because he is different. And there is a caste system, and he is on the lower level of that caste system because he's black. Our assignment was to teach English to Islamic men. Okay, picture this. Five white women teaching Islamic men. First of all, we're from America, and we're the bad people, right? We're that heathen nation. So we have all these barriers to break down, or we thought we did. Unfortunately, we sometimes get the bad press about Islam. Obviously, their religion is false, but they are people. And once we really began to realize that these are just people that needed to hear the gospel, we were able to share with them a lot easier. Let me see where we're at. This is still, this is still Casablanca. This is still Casablanca. So. All right, here we are. This is our missionary's house. This is us teaching English, and you will notice that we are dressed like this because we wanted to honor them and be respectful of their culture. So we always wore our headdresses. We didn't have to cover our face, but we had to cover our head. We had to cover, completely be covered down to our ankles. And you'll have to ask me about the faux pas that I made while I was there and my ankles were showing one time. And the lady came and actually pulled my dress down so my ankles wouldn't show. But we are sitting there teaching these men, and you can see that they're dressed in their natural cultural dress and their headbands and all of that things that kind of look scary to us. And this is Ellen. Ellen was my partner. But we were able to share with them the gospel, and we did that by doing something that was called conversational English and storying. We had a cloth that actually had pictures of the stories all the way from creation through the resurrection of Christ. Now, if you know anything about the Muslim religion, they kind of think they follow the same God that we do, but they don't. And when we were sharing with them the story of Abraham and Isaac, no, that's not what it was Ishmael. And we had a huge conversation with them about the difference in those two sons of Abraham. That's just a little gecko. We had little creatures running around us all the time. The lady that you see there in the cream color scarf is Sharon. Sharon is our International Mission Board missionary. And I want to tell you a little bit about Warren and Sharon, and I want to ask you to pray for them, because right now, in the country of Niger, there are a lot of things going on that are unsettling. Because of the countries that are near to them, like Mali, they are having right now an influx of a lot of refugees. Warren and Sharon, when I was there, were stationed in the capital city of Niamey. Since then, because I was in 2006, in 2009, they moved to a different city. I can't tell you the name of that city because at this point, Warren and Sharon are not allowed in their home. There is an Al-Qaeda camp in their town, and they are not allowed to go back. So they are right now displaced and trying to figure out, and just this week I received a message from her that they are going to stay in the capital city of Niamey and continue to work with the Tuareg people. The Tuareg people speak a language called Tamashek, and there is no scripture in the Tamashek language. Part of the Book of John has been written because it's an oral language. So it is not, there isn't a Bible for them to share with them. This is actually Warren, and this is in the midst of a sandstorm. And he's, kind of doing the sand rain dance for us, and kind of being silly and funny for us. This was my first night in the country of Niger, and we have a sandstorm. If you've ever been in a sandstorm, you know it hurts, and everything is orange. And so we took cover and are kind of hiding under the porch to get out of the sandstorm after teaching our English classes. We taught English to these men in order to witness to them, because we're using our storying cloths and we're sharing Bible stories. But we also taught them English in order for them to be able to get jobs. The Tuareg people are a nomadic people. And because of the droughts and all of the issues and things that are going on in Africa, they too have had to flee to the cities in order to get jobs. And so we were trying to help them to get jobs. That's my time. I knew that I would not be able to get 2 weeks worth of my mission trip in just 10 or 15 minutes. But I do want to tell you about a couple of people. And he should be coming up. The guy in the orange, or right here in the white, this guy is the only black man in our group. His name is Musa. Musa actually cleans at our Baptist building in Niger. And so he has some access to the gospel on a daily basis. This is the building behind you see is a tufala. That tufala actually fell down during the sandstorm, and we were able to, with our IMB funds, the cooperative program mission money that you give every week, was able to rebuild a home for this family while we were there. So we did that. You can see that a lot of it was destroyed, because their tufala are actually where they do most of their family living. It's their outside home, basically. This is all trash. This is just another family that we were able to share and witness to. While we were there, we taught 2 English classes a day, went to lunch in a different home, and had dinner in a different home with the people, and were able to share with them. And of course, I don't speak the Tamashek language, but you know what? I can smile, and I can let them know that I love them. But we're now getting towards the end of our second week, and wanting to meet with them on our last night and be able to share the gospel. Normally, when you're on a mission trip, and Lisa, this is something you'll want to be familiar with, you have a team leader, and the team leader is basically the person who carries out all of your activities and would normally be the one to do the sharing. And you're just kind of the other support people. Well, the 5 of us were meeting with our missionaries and praying about how we were going to actually share the full gospel with them. And Sharon Hessling said to me, "No, Sharon, you're going to be the one." And I said, no, I'm the guest. You don't understand. I'm with these girls. I've not done this before. This is my first foreign mission trip. I've done a lot of other stateside mission trips." And she said, "No, the Holy Spirit has said you're the one." Whoa. Okay, that was, first of all, very humbling and very scary to me. And so I began to prepare how I was going to share the gospel. And fortunately, like I said, part of the book of John they have in their language. And so I read to them the 3rd chapter of the book of John. And while I was there, one of the young men who that's just a locust. You gotta look at those. Was a Christian. And as I read to them in English, he translated to them in their Tamashek language. And so I was able to share with them my salvation experience and read to them John 3:16. Now, I don't know what the results of that were, except for this. That night, we were kind of having a going away party, and we invited all of our students to come and say goodbye. We expected them to come and just say goodbye, how we would do that in the United States, you know, have a nice trip. Well, they started arriving early in the afternoon. Our flight was to be at 4:00 in the morning, and we were supposed to go to bed about 9 or 10 o'clock and get some rest before our flight. At midnight, they were still there. And this is what they said to us: "Please come back and tell us more. Please come back and tell us more." And as I got on the plane that night, I looked out the window, and there's a full moon, and God said to me, "My moon shines over Niger, just as it signs over the United States. I'm working here. You're part of my plan. Your story is part of my story. As we hear that song again, I want you to take your papers, because you've heard a little bit about my story. And as you go and share, just as Isaiah realized and saw the glory of God and knew that there was a need to share, and knew also that he was not worthy, but that he was saved. Write down parts of your story, because that's all you have to share. That's all you have to share. We've heard in the past couple of weeks about missions in our association, missions in our state, missions around the world. You can be part of a mission trip. There's lots of ways. You can, first of all, give, and we do that through our cooperative program, or you can help support somebody who's going. Like I said, that trip was $3,000. I didn't have it. My church helped pay for that trip. You can pray. You can send cards. I was sharing with Lisa earlier, one of the greatest things that I had when I went to Prague was I had a card from a member of my church for every single day that I was gone. And I could open those cards knowing that even though I'm 6,000 miles away from home and my new grandbaby, that somebody was praying for me. And somebody cared that I was working and doing. So listen to the story, because your story is part of his. And he has a plan for you, and he fits it together, whether it's in Africa or it's in Traverse City.